Good morning. Today is Friday, August 26, 2016. It's 11 a.m. general discussion, and we have a Red Cross up, and we have Commissioner Heck and myself here. Commissioner Hare is not with us, and I would like each of you to say your name for the record and for the secretary, please.
Carissa Heddick.
Brian Anderson.
Okay. Did you get any spelling on that? Okay. All right, good. Okay, well, go ahead. We've been looking forward to hearing what you have to say. We were just talking to, I was talking to Mountain Hall a minute ago, and I knew Brian a long time ago, so.
Previous life.
Nice to have you here. But go ahead.
Thank you. Well, thank you for taking, for both of you taking the time to meet with us. It's important for the Red Cross to meet with the local government officials because we will always work closely together in times of disaster. It's also good for you to understand sort of the current initiatives that we have and how we are serving your communities, whether it's by single-family home fires or collecting blood or the larger response. So Ryan is a volunteer of ours in Josephine County, and how many times have you deployed on disasters?
National disasters four times, and then local disasters about three times.
And do you do home fires too?
I used to. I stopped doing that.
Okay. Yeah. It gets a little rough sometimes. It does. But I'm the chapter executive, and so I cover 10 counties within the Southwest Oregon, and I included a map in here so you can see the territory that. So we pretty much go from Corvallis down to Ashland, and then Cape Falls and Lake County to the coast. So we went to Florence downwards along the coast is our coverage area. And, you know, the Red Cross will be celebrating 100 years next year in Oregon, which is an amazing that an organization is 100 years old within and still doing very worthwhile programs. And then across the country, it's over 130 years old, of course, founded by Clara Barton. And our number one disaster, people know of us as blood and flood, you know, collecting blood drives and responding to things like Louisiana floods right now. But our number one disaster is actually single-family home fires. So across our region, which is the state of Oregon plus six counties in southwest Washington, mostly the kind of Vancouver area, we respond to about two fires a day within the state. Sometimes it's four fires a day, sometimes it's zero. It averages out to about two-ish. And how we're notified is that the fire departments will contact the hotline number for the Red Cross, and it goes to our duty officer who's on call, whether staff or volunteer, and then they dispatch volunteers from throughout the area. So they'll call that particular county and see who's on call for those shifts. And then we'll say, this is the address, and we usually respond within the hour of being notified, which is pretty fast. Of course, the volunteers are aware because they're on shift calls. Some counties, we have maybe six fires in a whole year, and at that point, they just call the volunteers. That might be my phone. Yeah, it is. It's on silent, so sorry. And so what we are able, do you want to talk about what you did for home fire so I'm not doing all the talking?
Yeah, basically we get the call and we respond out there. The goal for the Cascade region, which is Oregon, Southwest Washington, is 60 minutes to respond. And the idea is to make contact with the person, the homeowner, or the person living in a rental, and find out what their basic needs are. So we try to take care of clothing, food, and lodging. And we also have mental health people on call, and we also have nurses on call. So if there's some issues, usually if there's a pet dies in the fire, we'd like to hook up the family with a mental health specialist to talk to them. And how we, once we determine what their needs are, we issue them it's a debit card. And they're allowed to go out and purchase the items that they need to meet their unmet needs. And we're typically just trying to help them out for about 3 days, 3 to 4 days. If they have other needs, then we'll try to hook them into social services that are available, or we may extend some more resources from the Red Cross to them.
The card that you give them, does that cover things like, of course, toiletries, basic necessity type things, clothing, food? It covers any of those kinds of basic things?
Yeah, we give them, we also have what's called a comfort kit. It's a bag that has basic toiletry items in it, okay. Soap, water, toothpaste, white cloth, a razor. We have different ones for kids. We make sure there's no razors for the kids.
Yeah.
But when we give them the debit card, in the old days we used to mandate, okay, you had to spend it this, this, and that. And now we try to empower them and say, this is your money, and you manage it to meet your needs. We obviously tell them, you know, do not buy alcohol, cigarettes, get a tattoo, or any of that. But once it's given to them, we really can't control it.
How do you monitor them?
Once we give it to them, there's really no way to monitor
it. Okay.
I mean, they can go down to an ATM machine and withdraw all the money off the card if they wanted to, and then spend it however they want.
Yeah.
But the idea is after we interview them, and we try to determine, okay, what are your basic needs? And we have a set schedule, the amount of money that we can give them. It's not a whole lot, but it's enough to get them through the next couple of days.
And typically people have been through something like that and have lost so much, they typically don't use it.
Yeah, I mean, when I used to go out, there's something to be said about, you know, 3 o'clock meeting with a homeowner, and they're reduced to tears because they have nothing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we're dealing with people who have nothing to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And they lose everything. So this is just kind of that, try to help them out and get them over that little hump so they can hook into their insurance, if they have insurance, and you'd be amazed at the number of people who don't have homeowners insurance.
Yeah.
Or into a social service agency that can somehow help them out. And as you all know, we're somewhat limited here in Josephine County with the resources that we can offer people. Jackson County's a little better.
Well, housing is, for one, is probably pretty difficult on an emergency basis.
Yeah.
For families, there's just not much available for families.
No. We ran across that in the floods. I was in Louisiana in March on a flood. And they had people who were flooded. They had no place to go because there was, the housing was so tight.
Uh-huh.
And even on this current, in Baton Rouge, we have our staff are staying in what we call staff shelters. We're not putting them up in hotels because there's no room or they've been damaged. So we have currently, I think, about 3,000 volunteers deployed into Louisiana and California. Louisiana ones are staying in staff shelters. So picture basically a big gym where you got a couple hundred people staying in cots, and the victims or the clients are doing the same thing in a separate area.
Yeah. Okay. And so the Red Cross, we respond to a lot of disasters, and then we also are doing more on the preventative side, which is one of the newer programs you might not be aware of. So 2 years ago, we launched a home fire campaign where we are installing free smoke detectors into communities that are higher risk. And then also we have a hotline number so anyone could call in for a particular smoke detector. And across the country, 2,500 people die every year in home fires. That's a very high number, considering if you add up all the victims of floods and tornadoes and hurricanes, it doesn't quite hit 2,500. So this is really the leading cause, and the number has been stagnant for many years. So the Red Cross started this home fire campaign. We get half of our alarms from the Oregon State Fire Marshal's office, and the other half come from the Red Cross through a grant that we applied for. And across Oregon, we installed 6,500 alarms just last year. And then our goals are only going to go higher. And we have opportunities to go into communities. Currently, we're focusing on mobile home communities. One, because they go up more quickly. They're generally lower income, elderly, and youth, and children. And those are the main triggers for the death rates compared to everyone else. So how we manage it is we can identify a particular weekend, a Saturday, and work with the management company to say we'd like to do a home fire campaign, have your residents sign up on this list if they were interested in this. We recruit current Red Cross volunteers. We also reach out into the community because we only have a handful of volunteers, but we can also work with faith communities and corporate groups and Boy Scouts, and we can pull in a group of 20 or 30 or however big we anticipate the campaign to be, and then we get them trained up on how to install a smoke detector, and these are the lithium battery ones that last for 10 years. They're actually built into the alarm, so you can't remove it and take out the 9-volt battery like the old ones were. And we also do fire education, encouraging people to get out of their homes within 2 minutes because the smoke will pretty much make it difficult for that. and then having a meeting place outside your house. It's all the things we learned in the second grade, just re-education again, encouraging kids not to hide in closets when the alarm goes off, and to have a meeting spot outside. And can you actually open up all the windows in your house? You know, because sometimes they're painted shut or drilled shut. And
particularly the older houses.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of re-encourage all that, and then also talk about, we have a really good prepare booklet, which I have in the packets, that goes through building a disaster plan and a disaster kit for something larger like Cascadia or in Josephine County, wildfires. You are well aware that we can have a fire go through a house and people have got minutes to get out of their house because the wind took over. It's the middle of the night. They weren't notified. And so we've encountered that. So the home fire campaign, we can go anywhere. Actually, we had, two? We had one in Merlin, didn't we?
We've done a couple here in Josephine County. We did one in the southeast area of Grants Pass. Mm-hmm. And we've done one up in the Wolf Creek area. We've done out in Cave Junction.
Yep.
And so we will continue. What we're trying to do now is we have volunteers trained up so we can do it on call to where people can call in, and then the volunteer will go out and do the install.
So do you do it for any organization that would like to have you come out and do a program? Is that how you do it, or is it a neighborhood type of thing?
It's typically the ones I've been involved with are neighborhood. We'll work with the fire department to identify a high-risk area. We did one in Medford, and it was a mobile home park that it had two fires within the last 6 months. And so we've gone out
there. My finger slipped.
Gone out there, and we go door to door. Or we'll put flyers out and say, okay, on this day, we'll be out here to install. And then we go door to door, and we ask them, do you want us to install? We will not remove the current smoke alarm, but we will put one right next to it, and they can remove the old one if they want.
The reason I ask is if you had an organization, because you said you train Boy Scouts, and this should help out. If you had an organization where there were a lot of senior citizens or something, that they lived scattered, would you be able to do a fire training like you do, and then have them sign up to get smoke alarms?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Have you done things like that?
Yeah, we'll go to like community fairs, and then people can come up and have sign up for appointments, and then those, because they can be here, here, and here, and here, we usually use with the strike teams. You know, like Brian was saying, we have volunteers who are trained up on it, and then we just have to coordinate our schedules because we only have so much gear, like ladders and buckets, that we have to share around our region too. So we schedule a time where we can do it, and we call in those individual people and say, on Saturday between 9 and 12 or 12 and 3, you know, just plan to be home, and we are on the list to be doing installs. So it's something that has to be coordinated. And I am aware of the group here in Grants Pass called the Rascals, mm-hmm. which is an internet group. And I think that would be a great, because I know they're mostly senior citizens or I haven't been to the group, but I know that they have like good 100 to 200 people on the member list. And that would be a good connection group for mm-hmm. installs.
Well, I was thinking too about some of the churches. Some of the churches have not present company accepted, of course. Older members. We tease each other,
right?
So. We're the senior members of the board. And but there are many churches in the area, you know, many churches, and some of them are very small, but oftentimes their membership is elderly, mm-hmm. older people. And
I know we have done that in the Medford area, uh-huh. Jackson County, where we have gone to a church service during the day and set up in the lobby mm-hmm. and have to be able to hide. Right. Sign up. I know some of the hurdles we have here in Josephine County is lack of volunteers.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to, you know, dealing with volunteers. And
yes,
really
we know about dealing with volunteers.
You don't want to burn them out. And so, you know, if they're doing the home fire stuff and they're also doing that and they're doing deployments, it's easy to get burned out.
How many volunteers do you have here in Josephine County?
Well, I have.
Thank you for asking, right?
I think so. 47 people trained, anyway, that are, you know, the trained people. This is from calendar year 15. And so.
Okay, so, and when you talk about trained people for Red Cross, how do they become trained? Is training held here? Do they have to go someplace to be trained? Or what's involved in
training? There's a combination of training. A lot of the classes they can do online through the Red Cross training site. Once a year we do a disaster academy up in Salem. That's 4 days. We just did one last May, and we had 70 classes that we offered over a long weekend and trained up over 240 volunteers from the state of Oregon. Down here in Josephine, Jackson, Douglas County, we have instructors, and I'm one of them, and put on classes, usually over in Medford. If I can get a large enough interest in Josephine County, then I'll put one on over here. And like tomorrow I'm teaching a class, emergency response vehicle, get them certified to drive it, and that looks like the ambulance with the Red Cross on the side. And so it's a, you have to do a drive test, and it's a 5-hour class on on how to operate.
They operate it, the rules for doing it. And
rules, Red Cross rules, how you inspect it.
Where you can go and not go.
And then the drive test, you know, which to me is kind of the scariest part.
Hold that too.
Well, you got to make sure, because you're entrusting them with a resource, and you want to make sure that they're not going to run something over or damage a vehicle.
Do they, are they required to have a commercial driver's license or just a regular driver's
license? Just a regular driver's license. They have to be over 21 years of age. They go through a defensive driving class that's put on by the Red Cross.
Take all the fun out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also have to be certified in first aid and CPR.
Do they certify tricycles? Yes, a tricycle.
Watch your mouth.
Well, we want to make sure it has a flag on it so people can see it.
Yeah, it has to have a flag on it. And he has a sign on the back. He can switch that out with a Red Cross sign.
You have to be real careful when you drive a Red Cross car, because people know that it's a Red Cross. It's an esteemed brand. So you don't want any crazy driving out there, because we're going to get phone calls.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're driving the Red Cross car poorly.
Yeah.
We don't want that.
So with 40-some volunteers that are trained here, are they, and of course, we were talking about Cascadia this week, at least I am, with Jenny, I'm liaison for the emergency manager. So the training have to do, or does the training have anything to do with the earthquake or Cascadia? Do you ever do any training or discussion about that?
In fact, we just did a big, large scale, we're part of that statewide exercise, Cascadia Rising.
Okay.
And so we really exercised in that one. Our government liaisons, we assign them to all the emergency operations centers. We also did a shelter drill over in Shady Cove. Stood up a shelter, practiced with the kids, getting them signed into the shelter, and fed them a meal. And here, the biggest thing we work on, we're trying to make sure we keep up, is our sheltering people, because that's going to be big.
It's going to be huge,
yeah.
And we had a shelter for the fire about 2 weekends ago, right out by Cave Junction.
Yeah, it was out the
Selma?
Yeah, we had it in Cave Junction at the Methodist Church.
Church, right? Because when I saw a picture and I recognized it.
Yeah,
that's kind of our go-to place out in the Cave Junction area, depending on where the fire's at, other than in the fairgrounds here.
Have you been involved with it all, or might be involved? There's this organization in the county, the Josephine County Foundation, which works, I mean, it's a youth run.
I've heard the name, I've not been involved.
But they do a lot of this kind of community effort awareness stuff as well. And, you know, to make them aware of what some of the needs and opportunities are, there might be some to take on one of these projects. It was one of their annual projects to be able to expand the awareness of them.
Josephine Community
Foundation.
And that's more youth?
It is. It's
a youth foundation.
It's all administered by them. I mean, they're out of all five high schools now in the county have members of that. But
what's your leader's name again?
Chris Pendleton.
Pendleton, thank you.
Chris
Pendleton is the leader at Hidden Valley High School.
Right.
But the kids have become involved in various, they do fundraising, but then they become involved in community projects. And this might be something
they might be interested in making because
it is kids, and because they've developed a very good reputation, to get more kids involved in being prepared. Because to me, the kids aren't paying attention. You know, they're just not paying attention.
And we have Red Cross clubs. And we also host blood drives in high schools. That there is a connection. For instance, if the youth wanted to form a club within the high school, they can organize blood drives, and the school or the students could receive scholarship funds for that through the Red Cross. And, you know, going back to preparedness, that's one of my initiatives, is to kind of get the Red Cross clubs, because if we, because multiple reasons. One, a lot of our blood donors are older, so they're going to be phasing out, and mm-hmm. we need to kind of bring in the younger donors to kind of take over. 25% of our blood supply comes from youth and through high schools and colleges, and so we want to, one, we have a shortage of blood in the summertime because those larger drives that collect 100 to 200 units aren't scheduled in the summer when people are on vacation. And also, we have two neat programs. One is the Measles Initiative, where students can fundraise money for a measles vaccine. And we've almost been able to wipe out measles across Africa. And the other thing that's really neat is this new mapping program, where one of our colleagues recently became a coordinator, and they were able to look at, so like when the Nepal earthquake mm-hmm. happened, they took satellite imagery, and they're able to flush out more detailed maps so that they could take the disaster resources inland into Nepal. So that's an initiative that a lot of youth programs are doing across, that's kind of has an international focus. It's slightly different. And, of course, you know, the home fire campaign, and we have high school Boy Scout troops involved. I think that would be a great connection.
Mm-hmm. Craig Pendleton's phone number, his cell phone is 218-489-5541.
Okay.
And he would be more than happy to talk to you.
Yeah.
So they might be able to do. But these kinds of things sound like a real, that fits right in their wheelhouse of interest mm-hmm. in what the youth can do and that kind of thing. So.
Yep, absolutely. And then another event that we have related to Cascadia is, I don't have the actual event flyer yet because it's still, we're 6 weeks out, which is about the time we should be releasing it. But we are doing, did you hear about this Prepare Out Loud? Did you hear that from Steve a little bit? So this is an initiative.
I didn't find it very screens.
Yeah. So this is an initiative that we developed here in Oregon because we have a very unique geographic feature. And it's geared towards the community, the business, families, anyone that's coming. And we're doing kind of a roadshow in the months of September and October. And we're taking this program across the state. So within our region, it's going to be Corvallis, Eugene, and Medford. And the Medford one is scheduled for October the 6th from 5:30 to 7 at the Asante Smolin Center in Medford. And it's a really good, I've heard the presentation twice. There's a lot of it that I didn't know what, they say Cascadia, okay, what does that mean? But then when they talk about the science of how it is, the historic data to know why we know it happened 300 years ago, you know, the whole rogue wave that came across the Pacific and smashed into Japan, and Japan's like, where did this thing come from? And then they were able to correlate it to the science here. Really, the ways to stay safe when the event happens. I mean, we all have these earthquake drills. We get under our desk, we hold on. But in reality, the way this thing is going to hit, you got a second. I mean, there's a video that simulates a 9.0 earthquake. Stuff is going to get sloshed around the room really fast, and you really have to get under something and hold on to it. And then really, you know, what's the reality check, you know, post-event? You know, no phone lines, no electricity, you're going to be cut off on the roads, ODOT, the bridge failures, potential dam failures, you know, so it's going to be a big event. So as much of the information as we can, we really want to share it with people. So this is free and open to anyone to attend. We also really want to encourage the business communities because 40% of businesses don't recover after a major event. And so businesses might have their information saved on the cloud, which is great. But then what if you can't turn your computer on? How are you going to access your list? You want to go back to business? You know that. So this is one way of getting it out there. And then we're doing another thing as well. There's another flyer in here. It's a Faith and Civic Leaders Disaster Summit. And this is something we're doing specifically for kind of the Rogue Valley, where we're bringing together, as you know, the faith communities are going to come out and support an event. I mean, it's just the willingness to serve. And sometimes they're prepared to serve or not prepared to serve, but either way they're going to show up and say, we want to help. So this is a way where we can educate the faith leaders about what a disaster operation looks like. What does an emergency manager do? What is an EOC? Why donations to clothes and whatnot isn't necessarily the best way to support an event? How you can use your church as a certified shelter, have it done ahead of time, or if it's not big enough, if it's still standing. No, it doesn't have to be for Cascadia. It could be for wildfires, or it could be a distribution center. If you have nurses or mental health workers within your congregation, knowing that there is a specific function in a relief operation where they could be utilized, just a lot of information sharing. And then part of the program, too, is we're going to have one of the Medford Police Department people do a presentation on active threats and active shooters, because that is a reality that we are living in within the faith communities. We'll have a panel of individuals that responded to UCC from the faith, the civic, the government response, and from the university side, kind of share what those experiences were like. We'll have another lady whose husband was a battalion chief in Weed, California, that had to evacuate for the wildfire and they lost their home, and say, you know, this is what it was and this is how it happened to us. And so she'll just kind of share her incidences. So it's just a lot of information sharing. And then one of the committee members is here in Grants Pass, and he's with the LDS Church. He's worked on a resource list of people within his congregation who have X skill sets. So that way, that's a very proactive way that the faith communities can take inventory, if you want to say, of their membership and share that with the local government to say, this is what we have to offer within our communities, because no one can do it alone. You know, regarding like the Louisiana flood, for instance, I think we've deployed 24 people, I think it's up to now.
At Oregon?
Yeah. About 24 people have gone to Louisiana. 7 of those have come within our chapter area, 2 from Josephine, 3 from Medford, 1 from Eugene, 1 from Florence have deployed. They'll be coming back, I think, early next week. and so when they get deployed on events like this, they go within 24 hours. I mean, you've been deployed. You know when something's brewing. You get onto Volunteer Connection. You say, I'm available. I'm green, not yellow. And then, you know, they call you up and you pack up and go. And it's just an amazing, I mean, we're seeing on events this big, this is the same level as Superstorm Sandy. I mean, it's a massive event. It's going to cost the Red Cross $30 million. And the amazing thing, like when you really, I mean, you can toss the numbers around, but, you know, the government's going to be there to support longer term. They're doing their own work in other ways. We're taking care of immediate needs of people, like giving them a roof over their head, food to eat, and we're not being reimbursed for that. It's the Red Cross and the donated dollar and the willingness of volunteers to do that. And we're filling a massive, massive need. So
at one point, we were housing over 10,000 people in Red Cross supported shelters.
Yep. In one night.
One night. It's now gone down quite a bit.
Right.
So you have the dates on these events?
I have on one flyer, this one here, that said the Prepare Out Loud is still, and we just slightly updated. All this information is the same. We just have a newer version. It looks a little prettier than that. And then this one is going to be on as soon as I get the finalized event flyer, I'll email it to you. October 6th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. Asante, Mullen.
So what is the cost for people to attend these?
It's free, both of them.
Okay.
Yep. And we're going to be working with... we'll be working with... So Jenny Hall and Sarah Rubrick, they're going to be helping us get the addresses for all the faith communities within both Jackson and Josephine County. So we'll be mailing them. Our planning committee is going to, once we get the flyer done, we'll be mailing out flyers to each one of them. And then we have, as soon as that link is activated. It has to be built, but it'll be activated in a couple of days. Then the people can RSVP for it. But we are building it out for, in this particular event, the kind of the faith of the civic leaders. And I really want to kind of reach out to the diverse people who serve diverse communities, because they don't get the information channels. Mm-hmm. So we're really making a lot of inroads within multiple different lines of faith, as well as the Hispanic community, that are a little kind of under the radar, but also would be vulnerable populations.
Mm-hmm. So in this region, how many warehouses do you have for keeping supplies? You know, if you respond that quickly, do you have a lot of warehouses? Or
what we do is we have shelter trailers. We have one parked at the SAR compound in Myrtle. We have one in Wolf Creek, and we have one in Medford, plus with a small garage that houses all our stuff. The trailers will support up to about 100 people.
Oh, really?
In a shelter. And plus, we can put the call out, which is the nice thing about the Red Cross, mm-hmm. is if we drain our local resources, we can it just kind of ripples out, and we can bring people in from, you know, Eugene, Salem, mm-hmm. Larger trailers, more resources. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't fall on just a local. Locally, we try to make sure we can staff for about 24 hours.
Yeah.
So two shifts. We can get we got the Selma, when they requested a shelter out there, we had it stood up in 2.5 hours. Out in Cave Junction by bringing it from Merlin. Corey Krause was instrumental in helping us get the trailer out there. And we had staff out from Medford came over to help staff the shelter, and then myself and several local people and two from Douglas County came down to do the day shift. We didn't have anyone register for the shelter, but that's not unusual for a rural event. Typically,
they go to family or
they go family, friends, they got pets. You know, Red Cross mm-hmm. doesn't accept pets into the shelter. Mm-hmm. We do service animals. We'll take those in, but we don't do pets. That's why it's nice to partner with the fairgrounds mm-hmm. As a place to house animals. I know there is a Rogue Valley Kennel Club. Is that the trailer?
Yes.
We have one in Jackson County.
Diane Hoover with that fire, she had 35 kennels ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to her during that fire out there, and she said, I got 35 kennels ready to go. They told me you need to just call me.
Yeah, because I know it's been an issue.
She was out there.
Yeah, because it's been an issue in the past events.
Mm-hmm. No, she was ready.
So it was nice that mm-hmm. when they got that, I'm going, oh, great, thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Plus, we had
it's really nice. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Oh, my gosh. It is really nice.
Yeah.
It is really nice. That might be something that you as the Red Cross people might want to go see.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. It's not parked at the animal shelter. I'm trying to remember where they park it.
A lot of times what we like to do is do a shelter drill.
That's over at SAR too, isn't it?
I think it's over at SAR.
Yeah.
Is that SAR?
Mm-hmm. I think it's at SAR.
Yeah, we like to do a shelter drill where we stand up a shelter and also do it in conjunction with the animal people. So that you know, mm-hmm. set up their kennels, so we work out the issues about how do you register the people with pets, and how you make sure okay they're going to take care of their pets.
Well, they've got the whole system down in that trailer.
Yeah, that's my.
I think I saw that trailer because I went to the Gold Hill mm-hmm. when they had the shelter, and I think that group was there because the kids brought in stuffed animals and they put them inside a trailer.
Jackson County has their own.
Okay.
Trailer that's housed mm-hmm. at the Jackson County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, we have one here.
And we have one here.
We're willing to share it if ever needed.
Yeah.
Right.
That was part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it is just, it's all set up for, you know, tagging the animals and tracking and caring for them. I forgot how many animals. Was it 47 animals they can take care of? Or
37 and a half.
37 and a half.
A chihuahua.
That must be your half dog. That your half dog?
Yeah.
Turn her back. So, yeah, it's really nice. And
it's 100% improvement of what we had.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, of course, our concern and our worry is sometimes when those things happen is the big animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I know after the last disaster, I mean, they had some big animals they were trying to, you know, the fire out there.
We had the biscuit fire.
Biscuit fire. And
we evacuated during that time over 500 animals
yeah.
Into the grass pass area.
Uh-huh.
it was great. We had a lot of volunteers, people helping out at the start, bring them all in. The problem was after the event.
That's right. Continue.
Take them back.
Take them back. Or you had people say, well, I don't want them back.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the hard part, was getting them back home where they belong.
Yeah.
But community came together. They were great in helping, you know, cows and horses and lawns.
I don't want them back.
Well, you know, the dogs. And, I mean, there were several businesses here in Grants Pass that opened up their practice, allowed us to house animals in there. I think the worst one was turkeys or something like that. It was nice to see the community come together on that one.
It was
hard getting them back home afterwards.
Oh, you mean those 15 rabbits? I don't want them.
They're 22 now.
Oh, it's 22 now.
Yeah.
Overnight.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we know where we can take some. You'll take some.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Simon will, too. He's not here, so we'll have him take some.
And he lives out of the county, so he can take twice as much as I can.
Well, interesting enough, though, I took in a horse, and the person kept stalling off on taking their horse back, and that horse ended up being in my house for a year.
Wow.
And finally, I just gave him an ultimatum. The horse has to be gone, or it's going away.
A lot of people don't realize when you evacuate animals is how you're going to feed them.
Yeah.
How you going to feed them, yeah.
Yeah, especially the large ones.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Well, I know I called Diane Hoover out of the animal shelter after one of the disaster things, one of the fires, and told her, I said, I have a lot of hay. Let me know if you need some hay. I got a lot of hay. And I still have a lot of hay. So I did take some hay out to her. We took probably close to a ton of hay out there one time.
Wow.
So, okay, well, this is great. I didn't realize you were starting some of these programs, so
Yep. That's
good.
Yep.
I will rattle the cage of some of the pastors that they need to go.
Yeah.
Of course, maybe you would be better at rattling pastors' cages than me.
But we do some presentations in the school, the pillowcase project,
teaching
kids. You know, they get a pillowcase, they get the, you know, drawn and stuff, and develop a plan on what to take if they need to evacuate.
Uh-huh.
This came out of Katrina. We also have preparedness classes that we'll put on, and we'll do outreach.
Mm-hmm. I'll look forward to seeing the response of this Josephine County Foundation, because I would think that they would rise up and this would be right down there.
I think that's great, because as we, you know, part of my job is to go out in the community and look for partnerships, and so that's why it's helpful meeting with you, because you all know your communities. And then because I work out of the Eugene office and cover Tank County, so I have to plan my travels accordingly. But when I have a day I'm going to be in Southern Oregon, I line up 5 meetings, you know, to make it worth, you know, the time and distance. And this is for sure going to be the next one on. I want to meet with them. I want to meet with Rascals. What are some other groups within Josephine County that would be? Or is there a particular faith community that's really on the forefront of preparedness? Because usually there's one that kind of stands out.
You know, there is.
Besides the LDS.
I'm trying to think of the name. Keith, maybe you can help me out. It's the name of the church that's on Harbeck. You know, when Harbeck curves around.
Oh, right there on the road. Right.
If you're coming from.
That's the LDS church.
No, not the LDS church.
No, it's a little farther. It's by the school.
It's further back, across from the school. There's a little turn in there, and I can't remember the name of the church. And you go back, you can't see it from the road.
Right.
And you go back in, it's a big church, and they have been working on preparedness for about 5 years. And I can't remember the name of that church.
On Harbeck, you're coming on the west side of
If you're on 238,
mm-hmm.
where Harbeck goes both ways.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the LDS on this corner.
And the LDS is on the one corner.
And go down there.
So if you turn, if you're going out and LDS is on this side, you turn left. And as you pass the playground there in the school, just on the right-hand side, just before the road curves, on the right-hand side, there's a sign there and a driveway.
Oh, okay.
And you go up in there, it's in the back.
Yeah.
Big church in the back. And I can't remember the name of it.
It is.
But I know they have, and they've been working on it a long time. Because the person who was working on that program, name was, he and his wife both were working on that preparedness program. Because I got some information from them one time on that program for my church. And my church said they wanted to implement some of it, but they haven't done it yet. But when I'm no longer commissioner, we're doing that. But, gosh, what is it called?
Oh, there's what they call the Church of the Valley, which is...
No, it's not the Church of the Valley.
Well, he's one of the members of it. He's one of the founders of that. But they are a consortium of... I mean, the churches are broken down. Mm-hmm. I'm stereotyping, don't misunderstand me. You've got the more liberal side, more conservative side, and then you have the LDS side. And the LDS side is an entity unto its own that mm-hmm. functions very well and covers a whole host of things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very gracious in interacting, but oftentimes they don't want to be part of that group because of their own stances. Okay, that's no big deal. The more liberal side of the church consortium is headed up primarily by the Methodist Church over here, which is Herb Bailiwick, and also by the First Presbyterian Church up on 4th Street. And I can't think of who the pastor is up there. Now they've got a new one. Anyway, on the other side, River Valley Community Church is a big voice of that. And then also Dennis...
Dennis Weber, which is a Church of Christ.
No, it's a Assemblies of God Church. Well, it's called the Parkway Christian Center on the Parkway going up.
When you come
by Walmart.
Yeah, when you come to Grants Pass, it's right on the right hand side. And yeah. Off the
so Dennis Weber is from Parkway Christian Center.
Yeah.
So then there's also River Valley Community Church.
Right. Yeah.
That's a big one here.
Yeah, and those are the two big.
Okay, and that's more of the non-denominational kind of.
Well, I mean,
River Valley is more of a non-denominational.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, without being too terribly sarcastic, any church today in Chester County is non-denominational.
Right.
You know, they're real loose on that. So
right.
That's not an issue. It's more of the. Of the more what seeing themselves as more the conservative side,
okay.
The liberal side, and then there's the other side. So,
right.
But those are the main churches involved in that.
Okay. Good. Well,
I'm sorry, I can't think of the name of that church, and I've been over there a couple of times to meet with people.
Well, one of our
I just know how to get there.
Yeah.
And one of our committee members probably goes to the Grants Pass. LES Church, so he'll know. So when I send him an email, so this is what they said, he'll know what it is, because if it's right across the street, more or less.
Right, there's a little road there that goes
yeah.
by. There's one little church that you see right on the street with a steeple. That's not it. There's a little road there with a sign, and easy to miss, but you go turn up there and go, and there's the church. That's big.
Oh, your arrows confusing. The church that's on Harbeck, that occurs around right there.
The church that's on Harbeck with the steeple there, that's not the one I'm talking
about.
Well,
that's, okay, but that's the one that you should be talking about. The one with the steeple, which that's on the right, further back up on the hill, that's Orthodox Presbyterian Church today.
No, that's not it. There's another one. There's several churches on Harbeck.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There are.
I hadn't noticed that.
Mm-hmm. And this one you cannot see from Harbeck.
yeah. Denny Stahl is the pastor out there.
Yeah, I can't think of it either. And I can't think of the people's name either. That's not coming to me. Who headed up the program?
Yeah, Stahl is the pastor.
Stahl.
Is that the one that's right on Harbeck that you can see with the steeple right there?
I have no idea.
Kind of cream colored.
I'm not getting into steeple height.
Well, we have a steeple over here that got hit by lightning twice within minutes of each other.
So?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That. What the heck?
Only to find out I didn't have a lightning rod and hadn't had a lightning rod since it had been built.
And then right
now I have one.
Well, it did char a little bit.
It
didn't catch fire, per se, but it didn't.
Yes, we ended up with several thousands of dollars of damage.
And the conservative side of the church said that it was justifiable wrath of God. The liberal side said,
No, in all things, it was the presence of the Lord, right?
Yeah, right. Okay, we're good. Oh, for crying out loud. It's,
yeah, I know. That's how I'm feeling. I can't think of those people's names that run that emergency program at that church.
Well, once we leave, it'll come.
Yeah.
I'll
give you my card. You can email me. And then
thank you.
I know
once
what it
I get
is.
That, I will email it to you. I email them all the time. They're on my home computer.
So with kind of the larger businesses in Josephine County, I know, like, obviously Dutch Brothers, like, and then Fire Mountain Gems.
All Care? Yeah, Healthcare is the biggest employer in the county.
Yes.
So it's All Care and Asante. All Care, of course, is CCO. And then Asante,
mm-hmm.
biggest employers. And then when it comes to businesses, Dutch Bros and Fire Mountain Gems, you already have those. Krause Craft is another big one.
Yeah, that's the playground company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
Krause Craft, they're huge.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to think of some of these big ones. There are some very successful ones that aren't that big. You know, Gates Furniture and Rogue Roasters and Marzi Sinks. And
Rogue Roasters is a coffee
company. They're down the street here. And
Gates,
yeah.
They're very,
furniture?
Very historically active in the community.
Very community,
they would have to be
very
a larger
community
part.
Minded. And then Rogue, Hellgate?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the,
that's the jet boat company
jet
right
boat,
down here.
Right.
And Robert Hamlin's son-in-law runs that now.
Is that, have you ever done that? The boat tours?
Oh, yeah.
Are they fun?
I do it every year.
Every year you do it? Well, so you must really like it then. Okay. Because I'm interested in doing that.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
That's one of those things, if you haven't done, you should do just for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
You might not want to do it again. But
right.
When we get out-of-town guests,
we always do that.
A must. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much is it to do in a day? Because we're here over the weekend. We're staying.
Okay,
we're renting a house.
You can. It depends. You can do the breakfast trip. You can do the dinner trip. But you can also do a trip that doesn't involve a meal, and you go down and you go back.
Mm-hmm.
And so it depends what you want to do.
Right.
What we do when we have a lot of guests, we eat breakfast down at the Tap Rock, and we take the morning ride down and back.
Right.
And it seems to me it's like $40
per head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I like the dinner trip.
I like the dinner trip too, but it's like $65 or
$70
or something.
Wow. So what do they serve that's so good for dinner?
Oh, they serve.
They serve a lot of good food.
Yeah, chicken and ribs and
you're not gonna get
potatoes.
Hot dogs.
Yeah.
It's all you can eat. It's family
all you can
style.
Eat.
Yeah.
All you can drink. They have everything.
Mm-hmm. Like beer?
No.
Yeah, beer.
You can buy beer and you can buy wine, but they have iced tea and water and lemonade, I think.
Okay.
But you want to make sure you go on a warm day.
Oh, yeah.
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 Like
today would be
a good day.
A pretty good day.
Right.
It might even get hot in a couple of places, but because you're moving, it's not so bad.
So is it not, it's not rapid. It's just a jet boat. So you don't have to worry about.
No, you're sitting in a jet boat and
right.
just go in your shorts and T-shirt, take a
jet. It's not like a rafting trip or anything.
No,
you will
not.
Get wet.
Okay.
You will get wet, but it's not a rafting trip.
Can you take like little kids on there? Or
oh, yes.
I've taken little kids on there.
Like 2-year-olds?
I've taken them as young as 3, and I've seen them very young on there.
Okay.
But they're going to get wet.
That's fine. She has a...
But you have thing. To, when they spin the boat, be sure you're hanging on to them.
Right.
And I don't allow them when they're little to be on the side of the boat.
Oh, no.
In the middle of me.
Yeah.
Spoil sport.
And probably the problem you might run into is they get pretty full.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in doing it this weekend, you need to call and make reservations.
Immediately.
To see if there's any room. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that'll get something to do like on Sunday.
But the thing is the one that fills up is the dinner trip. So
mm-hmm.
that's why, you know, it's cheaper to take everybody to breakfast at the Tap Rock and take
right.
that morning one at 8:30 or 9.
Yeah.
That's why I do it that way.
You just might do that on
the I like the dinner trip, but that's the one I go on if it's me.
Yeah.
But if I'm taking my grandkids, it's not the one. They enjoy breakfast at the Tap Rock just as much.
They were eating at the Tap Rock.
I like to eat lunch there out on the deck.
The Tap Rock is
really good
is
sandwiches.
Great for the ambiance.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to go to the Tap Rock and say, man, that's great
food.
Okay. Lunch is good. They have good sandwiches.
Okay.
And they have Ivar's chowder, if you like chowder.
Yeah.
I just can't beat the look and the view.
Yeah, how can you? Yeah, I mean.
Okay, well, that's good to. Because one of my favorite places when I drive up I-5 is Heaven on Earth. The restaurant, oh my God, it's good food. I stop off and get the cinnamon rolls and the cobbler, but we actually ate dinner there, and it was really good, homemade, pure food. Not like, that was one of my standby places.
There's Calvary Chapel of Grants Pass.
You found it?
Yeah.
Calvary?
Calvary Chapel.
Calvary. And that's what
Calvary.
Calvary.
Like Calvary Chapel of Grants Pass. There's two of them out. There's one on that side, right across from the junior, from the middle school. And then the other one is that Faith of Orthodox Presbyterian of the Calvary Chapel. This is Denny Stahl is the pastor of that one, and he'd been very involved in a whole host of different community projects. And
that church has been very involved in getting their members prepared and preparedness classes and
Good.
Yeah, he would be a good contact to talk. He's got his fingers in a lot of that stuff.
So Pastor Stahl is part of the Calvary Chapel,
yes.
Which is that road on Harvbeck Road that you were thinking of.
Right.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, mystery solved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mystery solved.
All right.
He found it.
I feel better when I go to sleep.
I was impressed with how much effort that they had put into doing that. Of course, that was a couple of years ago. I don't know who's running it now, but... We're doing a lot then. So. But unfortunately, there's an awful lot of people that still are not doing anything. And they're going to be ones calling upon you folks for assistance because they haven't done much.
Yep.
Well, of course, you know, Marty, we're prepared.
Some of it requires a shift in mindset because nobody wants to do anything because it's going to be... our job to meet their needs when it happens. They say, well, what have you done?
Right.
That well game.
I know.
But that's the problem. Well,
and you really see it on the wildfires when they burn through a community.
Yeah, yeah.
People just not, because they don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, those big things. I mean, I hate to be the bah humbug, but when Cascadia comes, who in the heck is going to be prepared for Cascadia?
No.
Nobody's going to be prepared for it. I mean, it's going to be, beyond description. If it is, it's 9-2 or something. Who in the heck knows what it's going to, this building will be on the ground most likely.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason I'm diving into the safe in there in my office.
There's no reinforcing in this building.
Yeah. And, right. That kind of stuff. And so... And one of the things, I grew up down in Southern California, so you have some earthquake experience, though, still. Lived in Oklahoma for a while, too, and tornadoes come through there. And when a tornado comes through, it just removes everything of remembrance and distinction of markers. And you have no markers. And where are you at? And 6th Street is all going to be rubble. And you... lose track. I mean, where's G Street? I mean, you just lose direction, and we have no idea what the heck is going to happen, and the recovery will be a realistic exercise. And, we will recover. Probably be a big consequence, death toll or whatever, and the community might be, 30% less than what it was before the earthquake because people moving out, leaving or whatever. Okay. But, are you prepared for all that? Right. You have to figure out some way that's where the community resources and the strengths come into play. Because there are people who can stand, and people will gravitate to that kind of a situation. And that will be the corpus of how we get through some of this stuff on individual strengths and the coordination of contacts and that kind of thing. But, it's just like, oh, yeah, you're prepared for a Cascadia. Right.
Well, I've been telling everyone, you need to be able to at least 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Weeks. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
more than that, but at least two. I mean, I'm planning for 30. And every bit by bit, you know, you just start squirreling away.
Uh-huh. Well, and the other thing, though, is in your prayer life, if old Joe Bob up the hill has got his 3 months' supply of stash in his house and the water, and everybody else around him has none, I hate to say old Joe Bob is going to become a sharer of the community, whether he likes it or not, either willingly or unwillingly.
Or somebody might go in with a loaded gun.
And when you reduce it down to, my family's going to starve to death, and I know you've got food, I'm sorry, there's no civility in that one at all.
Yeah.
And that's the tragedy of some of this stuff. It's just, man.
So,
I'm a positive person.
I know, you're very upbeat. We have to hit you upside. Morning to make sure you're upbeat
and upright.
Upright too.
That too.
So here's my card there, and I've got two other, one for other commissioner and just an extra if you want to pass that along to anybody else. Some other business cards to stick in there.
Stick that in your bag.
And because she has to keep everything.
Yep.
Let me go get. Would you go to get a couple of our cards for them? One Keith and mine, Simon's, please. We ought to keep some of those back here. I keep forgetting to do that.
For those of us who are prepared, we keep it in our pocket, ma'am.
You know, I can take them with me and they're gone. Take them with me and they're gone.
I know.
They're always gone. And it's like, oh, yeah, I had some, but they're gone. I already gave them all away.
I understand.
She's going to get some.
Or else I'll pull out my phone.
Thank you.
Pull my phone out and cards flop out. And go,
thank you. Yeah. You guys know each other already.
You want a set of these two?
Oh,
you know where I am. You even know where I live.
You
even have your phone number.
You even have my phone number and my email.
And you know what? Facebook.
Yes, and Facebook. Yes, we do that too. And today is Marty's last day to work.
Oh, really?
Today's his last day.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would think probably.
Well, I've heard this before.
Me too. He told me he's going to retire at 58, 59, 60, 62, 65, 68, 69.
What?
On and on and on. He's almost 72.
Oh, my.
And so I had filed to run for re-election, and that was all set to go. And I came home one day, and he's sitting on the couch, and he says, my brother died today. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, it's always hard to take, even though he hadn't seen his brother in 20 years, they weren't close or anything.
Sure, so.
And he says, he was 73. I said, yeah, but he was a very sick man. I mean, he's been sick for at least 10 years that I know of. And he says, yeah, but I'm almost 72.
Mm.
He said, I think I'm going to retire. I said, I'll believe it when I see it in writing.
Like I said, I've heard this before.
Yeah, okay. I've heard this for years. And I came home the next day, and there it was on the counter.
Oh, really?
He put it in writing and turned it in, he was done. He notified, this happened back in March, and he notified AMR, and he notified Telemedicare, and today's he finished up in April with AMR, and he's finishing up with Telemedicare today.
Good.
This is it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what he needs to do is get connected to you, Red Cross.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Travel first.
Well, yeah, we're traveling. We're traveling. We'll see how long that goes.
Might travel separately.
Might travel separately, yes. Because we're trying to do bucket lists, and our bucket lists aren't the same. So
I can understand that.
Huh?
I can understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, it'll be fun. But you've worked with him so many years. I want to let you know he is retiring, so today is it. And,
good.
2 o'clock, he's done.
Nice.
Two more hours.
But who's counting?
Clean his desk off.
Yeah, clean his desk off, that's for sure. He came home with some of it already yesterday, because he worked yesterday too. But anyway,
okay.
And he's been here, a physician here, since 1978. June, I think, of 78 or June, July.
Not many changes, it seems.
No.
Just look at the pictures.
I first met Marty when I first got hired here. I had to do my physical, and he gave me the physical.
Oh, really?
And that's when I first met him.
Wow.
That was 83.
Wow. And he used to do all the physicals for the sheriff's department and the fire departments and all of that. Mm-hmm. He used to do them all.
And one thing he said, I still remember to this day, he says, I have a very long finger, but I'm not going to do that today.
That's him.
Yeah. I still remember that for 83.
Did you start out as a firefighter or a deputy?
Deputy.
Mm-hmm. Because some people start out, some people started out as medics and or firefighters and then medics and they became doctors or nurses or nurse practitioners or,
Start out 83, spent on the road for 9 months before I got sent to the police academy. Mm-hmm. That has now changed how they do that.
Yeah, you go to the academy right away.
Right away. And I spent the first part out in Cape Junction. I used to send the new people out to Cape Junction area, graveyard.
Sober up.
Well, graveyard.
Oh, man.
And you...
You get all kinds of experience.
You sink or swim. Yeah. You learn to talk because your backup was 30 miles away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did when I was had the choice as I hire a new guy. Send them to Cape Junction because I had to learn to talk. And that was... Mm-hmm.
Learn to talk like people down or learn to...
Well, because you give a 21-year-old a badge, a gun, and a fast car.
Right.
They think they're indestructible.
Right.
So I used to tell them, you send them to Cape Junction, we're back up, it's 30 miles away.
Right.
And
reality shit.
Reality, it's a swing shifter graveyard.
Right.
And they have to learn to talk because everyone's going to be bigger than you are.
Right.
And meaner than you are, especially if they've been drinking.
Right.
And with a whole lot more friends.
Yeah, and a whole lot more friends. So they have to learn to talk.
They have a lot more backup than you do.
Yeah. So that was just part of their educational as a...
Well, I think that's kind of the way law enforcement does almost anywhere is, they kind of throw the younger ones, almost throw them to the wolves kind of thing. Because I know my son-in-law, I was like, oh, my God, you mean you're working that part of Portland, northeast? It's like, ooh, that's where he worked when he first went to Portland. Fortunately, he already had 10 years in law enforcement. He'd come from a SWAT team in Marion County.
So he already kind of knew.
Yeah, so he was already seasoned, but still, they gave him that crappy shift. He's a detective now, which he wishes to stay. But, law enforcement is tough.
Yeah, a lot of times it's based on seniority, so new guys are going to get, that's why I used to hate to promote, because I'd be on, day shift and take a promotion, I'd go to graveyard.
Yeah.
Because it was all seniority based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's just part of the deal.
Yeah, it is. Well, I have a grandson who's 20, and he said he did not want to be a cop like his dad. He's becoming a firefighter in the military. Went in the military. So, just something different.
Good profession.
Yeah, it is.
I never had the privilege of telling the military what I was going to do.
A lot of people didn't during that era. What was your draft number?
0331. No, I enlisted before the draft.
My dad enlisted too, because he enlisted into communications because he had a high draft number, and he enlisted into communications even though he was a graduate of pharmacy school. Like he already graduated, but it didn't matter. So he got into communications, and he could have gone to the White House to do the communication plugging in that type of room. But then he's like, no, I'm a trained pharmacist. So they eventually moved him over into pharmacy. But it was, all three boys had really high draft numbers. Mm-hmm. So
I registered for the draft after I got out of the service.
Right.
So it was 4 years in, and I had first thing I did went down the draft
the service board
and registered. Yeah, well, they thought they had a hot one, too. How old are you? And you haven't registered yet?
No, here's my DD-214.
Oh, okay.
Already been there, done that.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. I already earned the DD-214.
Got another one.
Yeah. It's if you get the right thing, what you want, and he did. He held up for what he wanted.
So. I got the right thing when I wanted to. 17 years old, I was a troubled youth. And so I had a deal. I could, San Bernardino County, California. So my probation officer, at that time, they had a deal. You could work it out with the Marine Corps, or you could go to California Youth Authority. And so they offered me that deal. I'll take boot. You know, I'll go to Marine Corps. That's it, but 13 minutes into boot camp, I'm going, that's a dumb.
Should have come to your youth.
So those Marines don't play.
Well, but it was a godsend for me. It really turned my life around.
And
I just feel sad. And sometimes you can't do that today. Because there's a lot of these young folks that would be a big benefit for them if they just get, the idea was that 17 years old, the world revolved around me. So,
unfortunately, at this point, sometimes they make a decision that affects them for the rest of their life.
Oh, my. Yeah. Sure. Good or bad. Good or bad.
Mm-hmm. So. And he said he was a troubled youth, but he's still a little troubled.
Yeah. So he does the electric.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The decision to run was quite troubling.
Oh,
gee. Well, you've done a good job, Keith.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
You have that in writing.
Well, thank you. Thank you both very much. Anything else you wish to add to it? Okay. Thank you. I learned a lot today about the Red Cross and the program you have, and I look forward to these programs. I'm going to have spread the word.
Absolutely. Feel free to reach out to us. Any concerns, questions, you have our number. You know where to find him on Facebook.
On Facebook. I will do that.
Yeah, Jenny has my number.
Yeah.
Jenny has your number.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
Jenny has a whole lot of numbers.
Right. She's a good egg. I like her a lot.
Yeah, she's very, very thorough in everything that she does. So that's good. Okay, we are adjourned at 12:08.